Salutations and greetings to you.
Thank you for your interest in the activities of the Museum of Uncommon Phenomena.
Allow us to introduce ourselves.
I am Leslie Thurston Brown.
And I am Carl Thurston Brown.
And together we're the curators of the Museum of Uncommon Phenomena.
The museum's purpose is the preservation and presentation of the barely believable.
It was initially founded on a private collection of artifacts gathered by Professor Archibald Floss and Dr. Charlotte Tan.
Itinerant show folk whose disappearance we are investigating.
But we suppose you're here because you're intrigued by the exhibition of artifacts in the window of Toronto's Red Sandcastle Theatre.
And we wish to acknowledge our gratitude for their ongoing support.
But before we proceed, as we are always wont to remind you, be prepared to jettison the insidiousness of disbelief when encountering any new information, even when questionable, far-flung, or far-fetched.
For, as our honorary patron William Blake reminds us, what is now proved was once only imagined.
What follows is the saga that culminates in the auspicious meeting of Professor Archibald Floss and Dr. Charlotte Tan in Ontario, Canada in 1901.
It all began with some hearsay of a cryptozoological oddity which took Professor Floss from his home in England across the Atlantic Ocean and into the heart of Canada's wilderness to conduct an investigation into the rare, ravenous were-rabbit of Wawa.
So with that said,
are you ready?
Good.
Here we go.
Following lengthy travels as yet undocumented, Professor Floss arrived in the township of Wawa, east of Lake Gichigumi, and naturally headed to the local inn. Here he heard that lumberjacks had made a number of outlandish claims about the rare, ravenous were-rabbit of Wawa. In line with Floss's existing erudition on the subject of were-creatures, much of the lore was fairly typical. But there were some unique and frankly dubious elaborations, or at least as Floss thought.
Firstly, the fearsome critter is of a prodigious size. Some even say of human size. Its physical abilities had also increased in proportion, supposedly being able to leap a distance of 6 foot in a single bound, and having a top running speed of approximately 100 miles an hour. Lastly, it was further asserted that the creature transformed not from human to rabbit, like the more well-known werewolves, but from rabbit to human.
From his investigations at the inn, Floss was directed to a Mr. Jean-Pierre Polcher, owner of Gander Farm. Polcher was very concerned, if not a little angry, as his crops had been repeatedly decimated, especially the carrots. "Damn were-rabbit," said Polcher. Floss departed, reassuring him that he would get to the bottom of this mystery.
To his surprise, Floss came upon a group of local children playing a game of their own devising, based on the were-rabbit. A kind of a version of tag, played in the round, but with a blindfold and rabbit headgear for the person who's deemed it.
Whilst watching the game, Floss was approached by a Charles Thornton, a 10-year-old boy, who claimed he knew who the were-rabbit actually was. He pointed out another child, called Twitchy, who stood aloof from the gaggle of children, and stated he'd witnessed him transform whilst chasing him into the forest. Thornton went on to bemoan that none of the local adults had taken his tale seriously. He'd been accused of crying rabbit.
Naturally, needing to check all leads, Floss approached Dennis Innes, a.k.a. Twitchy. By appearance, the 9-year-old boy had some superficially promising facial features, buck teeth, a button nose, but most importantly, his eyebrows inching towards joining in the middle. Floss found him to be of a timid and nervous disposition, but his bright, darting eyes revealed an exceptional curiosity. On mentioning Charles Thornton, it sadly became clear that Innes was bullied by him. Floss gave some very hard-won suggestions as to how to proceed with Thornton and left wishing him well. Yet another dead end, thought Floss, deciding he would have to go into the forest and search for the elusive creature himself.
As he went about collecting 2 weeks' worth of provisions, the townsfolk tried to offer advice to Floss as to how best survive in the wilderness. He was quietly blasé to this, as he was of the stout belief that if he should lose his way, as long as he walked in a straight line, he would eventually come to a road. This always worked in the English countryside, but as soon will be evident, Floss was utterly inexperienced in this foreign landscape. Off he foolishly trudged.
12 days into his expedition, he heard an unusual sound nearby, which could only be described as part purr, part hum, with what sounded like occasional words, although very badly pronounced. He thought the mixture of animal and human sounds could only mean one thing. Floss set off in the direction of the sound.
Cautiously cresting a bank, he spied a rabbit, and settled in to observe. Unfortunately, Floss's concentration on the entire expedition was repeatedly thwarted by the wealth of furiously biting insects that inhabit these wilds. He had always been a magnet to mosquitoes. Upon shooing away yet another gnashing horror, the rabbit was alerted to his presence and bolted into its hole. Annoyed at this outcome, Floss approached to examine the warren's entrance.
The rabbit hole appeared standard issue, apart from a detail observed on the significant amount of carrot detritus strewn around. There was a mixture of both rabbit and human teeth marks on each individual carrot. "I was right!" exclaimed Floss. "In its rabbit form, the beast is clearly of average lupin proportions, and therefore highly unlikely to have the ability suggested by those spurious lumberjacks." With this discovery, Floss felt confident he was now on the trail of this barely believable wonder.
He decided to lay in wait. He waited, and he waited. The rare, ravenous were-rabbit of Wawa didn't reappear.
3 weeks after Floss's entrance into the forest, the townsfolk began to wonder just what had happened to him.
1 month after his disappearance, local hunters and lumberjacks began making reports of a disheveled human covered in plants, constantly scratching itself, having been seen deep in the forest. Sightings were always at some distance. The figure was witnessed to seemingly be holding conversations whilst alone. Cries of
"He shall eat!"
were heard. Attempts to assist always failed, as the figure would run away.
After 3 months, the legend of the Wild Man of Boreal was born. A significant number of sightings of a babbling, humanoid plant creature roaming erratically in the woodland were being reported. It was claimed that the creature had been heard bellowing,
"Stop it, Billikin!"
alongside the exclamation,
"He shall eat!"
This development deeply concerned the townsfolk with worries for their safety. It was decided that snares should be laid to capture the beast.
Eventually, one of the traps worked, and the bedraggled creature was brought into town, having been knocked out by a lumberjack. in the process of stripping away the vegetation from what was now evidently a man, it was further discovered to actually be the hitherto missing Professor Archibald Floss. How he got into this dire state was a matter of much speculation.
Now, by some fortuitous coincidence, the day before Floss's weary body was brought out of the woods, an eccentric, itinerant medicine woman by the name of Dr. Charlotte Tan had been seen hawking her wares in the center of town. Of note was her learned banter about the shortness of life and the need to maintain one's vital sparks to ensure the fulfillment of one's ambitions. Her remedy, a revitalizing elixir, was perfect for the task and was assured to be an efficacious, sure cure for sore throat, hangnail, youthful errors, and a newly reported affliction of concern, the dreaded hydrangea. The townsfolk of Wawa were particularly in alarm, as it was claimed by Tan that hydrangea was communicable to people from close contact with infected were-rabbits. In her esteemed and curious capacity, she was called upon to attend to Floss as a matter of urgency.
Tan confirmed Floss was indeed suffering from an acute case of the serious circumstance of hydrangea. Contraction of this ailment is now canon in the lore of the rare, ravenous were-rabbit of Wawa. Luckily for Floss, though, Tan's patented remedial was in robust supply, and he was administered a short course of treatment whilst under her care. At first, Dr. Tan noted that while still in a befuddled state, Floss held babbling conversations with unseen persons. These three distinct characters, Azrael, Billikin, and Bob, appeared well acquainted with Floss's time in the forest. As he improved, his regular exclamations of
"He shall eat!"
waned and became less slurred, eventually revealing the utterance to actually be "It's a rabbit."
During the course of his recovery, Floss and Tan forged a deep bond. He confided his experiences in the wilds and introduced her to stick figures he had made for company to battle his loneliness whilst lost. These were Azrael, who was wise and erudite, Billikin, a pestering clown, and Bob, a talking dog. During this sensitive time together, Floss and Tan discovered a keen shared interest in the imaginative resourcefulness of the human mind and the study of all things barely believable.
Such was the success in treating Floss that the proceeds from the sellout of her entire stock of revitalizing elixir meant Tan found herself in a most fortuitous position to help fund further expeditions. The infamous partnership of Floss and Tan had begun, the unfolding story of which we, the Museum of Uncommon Phenomena, are continuing to research. Further findings are forthcoming.
We thank you for listening.
This has been part of an ongoing series of recordings from the Museum of Uncommon Phenomena during our ongoing residency in the streetside window of Toronto's Red Sandcastle Theatre.
To find out how you can support our work, visit uncomphenom.org.
And follow us at uncomphenom on Instagram.
To keep abreast of the museum's developments.
Ta-ta for now!
Rabbit?